Welcome to the Bulls Show, your look at the Chicago Bulls from a fan's perspective. I'm your host, Nils, and on the line is someone who wishes he could love his wife and family as much as Pau Gasol loves Kobe Bryant. Mitch, what's happening, dude?
What's up? How you feeling, buddy?
I'm feeling good. You know, I'm pretty proud of us because we're recording this late Monday night after we agreed to record it on a weekly basis on Sundays. We had to postpone. No Ricky this week, and we very much could have folded it in and you know, called it a week. But here we are with more than enough to podcast.
Yeah, we're here, man.
So a pretty strange, interesting week since the last time we recorded. Quick recap, the Bulls front office doubled down on liking their guys, Kirk Heinrich notwithstanding, and they decided not to make any major moves by the trade deadline. Then the Bulls suffered a predictable shorthanded loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers, followed by less than 24 hours later with a surprising win against the second-best team in the East, the Toronto Raptors. And then last night's, strange to say the least, Kobe farewell tour in Chicago, Bulls going 2-1 since the last time we recorded. Mitch, a lot to get through. We'll start with the trade deadline. I think the consensus from you know, Bulls Twitter, from a lot of the Bulls bloggers, shout out to Ricky, Kelly Scaletta, Chris Terzic of Bloggable as well. I think the consensus was that the front office really fucked this up, that they had an opportunity here to shake things up, to either blow up the roster or make some sort of move that would better align the personnel with the direction or the scheme that Fred Hoiberg wants to implement. We can spend the next few minutes bashing the front office, but I want to take a different approach here, given your background, given your real life career as an attorney, as a public defender. I want to put you in a position to play devil's advocate, to defend Gar Forman and John Paxson for standing pat, to try and convince the masses, myself included, as to why it was actually a good idea for them not to make any moves when there were a bunch of rumors and speculation going around that there were offers on the table. Yet, once again, they stood by their convictions with this roster. How would you go about defending Gar Forman and John Paxson?
I mean, I don't think there was a lot there for the Bulls to do. If you go through the Bulls roster, there isn't a lot there. I mean, Cameron Barisal sucks. Aaron Brooks, not great. Jimmy Butler, a guy that you want to keep for the future. Mike Dunleavy stealing from the Bulls with a back injury at 36. Feliciano shouldn't be in the NBA.
How dare you shit on Mike Dunleavy like that when he's your quintessential glue guy.
Powell, you know, a guy that you could probably move. McDermott, a guy that you're still probably waiting on. You can't get great value for him because he hasn't really shown anything. Taj Gibson's a 31-year-old off-injured power forward that can't jump anymore. Nico's injured. Etwan. Joakim Noah's injured. Bobby Portis, you probably want to wait on. Derek Rose makes $22 million. And who am I missing? Tony Sale sucks. So... I mean, there wasn't a ton to deal with. Now, listen, I wanted the Bulls to make a big move. I lamented on Twitter that the Bulls needed to make something happen. I would have done something, tried to do something with Powell. I would have tried to do something with Butler. I would have tried to do something with Rose. But in the end, it didn't happen. I'm not going to freak out that the Bulls didn't do anything. It sucks. I wish we had a more aggressive front office. I feel like the Bulls are going to die being like the Hawks or the Cavs from the 90s. But, you know, I don't think that there was a whole lot out there for the Bulls to do.
You just gave inventory of why this roster is trash. And I can't argue with you on those points. You know, I would... There's not many players on the team that I would consider untradeable. That being said, wouldn't conventional wisdom suggest that you need to do something to blow it up rather than have a first-round exit and out with this current roster that hasn't been enjoyable to watch?
Well, the flip side is that if the roster is trash, there's not a lot of trade value to make those trades, right? So if we think that the Bulls roster is trash, the other teams have access to TV and the internet and all the other things in video, so they know those guys are trash. So it's not like the Bulls can do a lot.
But hold on, hold on. There were reports, though, that an offer was on the table that would
Sacramento
send
deal.
Costa Kufis, I think that's how you say his name, along with Ben McLemore, a pretty athletic young wing, for Tony Snell and Pau Gasol, as well as, wasn't there a pick involved?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do that deal?
Well, there are a couple of things that you have to consider first. First, I think everybody's assumed, because we love to hate the front office, which we should. There's nothing wrong with that. But we kind of assume that that deal was definitely out there on the table. Like, do we know that that deal was definitely there? I mean, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but I don't know.
Let's operate under the assumption that it was. I mean, can we essentially describe Gar Foreman and John Paxson as delusional for not making that deal?
I mean, I probably would have made it. Here's the thing. The deal makes sense, and I can see why people really want to do it, if the assumption is the Bulls are going to turn around and sign Pau Gasol. It's like a 3-year, $60 million deal, right? Nobody wants the Bulls to use up all their cap space on Joakim Noah and Pau Gasol this year. But if you assume that the Bulls are going to be logical about the situation, and they particularly haven't been great, they haven't been super logical in the past, if the Bulls can sign, you know, Pau Gasol to a $10 million deal, they cannot promise to close him every game and not promise him play 34 minutes a game, then he's a better basketball player than anybody you're going to get in that deal, right? I know people are kind of excited about Ben McLemore. I wonder how that excitement would be if he wasn't like, what, the 8th or 7th pick in the draft and didn't play in a big program. He's been a pretty much a career failure, and it's been early, just like Tony Snell has been a pretty much a failure. I don't think that we were clamoring for Ben McLemore. I don't think people were really clamoring for Costa Kousis. So it's not like the Bulls got a lot better on the court. Now the thought is, with that trade modification, the Bulls might have a better shot at getting that first round pick. I don't know. If we think that Powell sucks, how can we turn around and say, well, Powell sucks, but if he goes to the Kings, it's going to make him a lot better? I don't know. That trade, I can understand why people wanted to do it. I just wasn't like, oh my God, we didn't make that deal. The franchise is over.
Right. Like, as you said on Twitter, it didn't necessarily move the needle. Wouldn't have moved the needle. I viewed it as more of a, you know, I don't want to pay Powell $20 million this offseason. I don't want the front office to do that. And by all indications, that's the direction they're going in. You know, let's clear Powell off the books. Let's retool. Let's try and get some younger talent and get that additional draft pick and build from there, knowing that the season is looking like it's going to be a waste. A couple points that you brought up about Powell, where, you know, you made the assumption that we could possibly convince him to take a lesser role, take lesser money. I don't think there have been any reports that he'd be willing to do that. Powell's been nothing but a prideful guy, and we've heard reports about, you know, him not wanting to come off the bench and getting his minutes, getting his run, and, you know, potentially wanting more money this offseason. I think you're rolling the dice, and I think Powell in himself, you know, in a vacuum, isn't trash. I think he's pretty effective.
Good.
He's a good Powell's basketball
good,
player.
He's a good
basketball player, and if we were to trade him, that would effectively be raising the white flag and conceding that the season's over and we're not really going for any sort of miraculous title run. I get that. You know, Pau's offense on this team at this point, I feel like, is pretty much irreplaceable. The problem is the direction of the league is going in the opposite direction of what Pau's game is predicated on. The league is all about pace and space. It's about positional versatility. It's not about throwing the ball into the post, into the block, and letting a big man work. You know, you have to be able to defend the pick and roll effectively if you want to be a top team in this league. And that's just not Powell's game. And so that's my concern. My concern is that we're now, without us trading Powell, we're ultimately going to retain him for next season, and he just doesn't fit not only the direction of the league, but also, you know, the whole principle of Hoiball.
Well, I mean, there are two things there. The first thing is this. I think people are assuming that he's going to make $20 million. I don't know where that came from. Like, why is that, like, fact now? I think there is a rumor out there that he's going to want a lot of money, and I think everybody wants a lot of money.
Challenge the credibility of Brian Windhorst.
Yeah, like who's always been right about the Bulls, right? So, you know, he's making about 7.5 this year. You know, the Bulls, you know, add 33% to that, $10-12 million, and you know the Bulls are in a good place. Also, thinking about Pau Gasol is that he's a guy who obviously, I think, takes cities into account and winning into account. So if he's a guy that's
willing, cities, do you mean operas?
Exactly. So if he's willing to go to, you know, Charlotte and make, you know, or willing to go to Utah, and I'm just throwing random destinations out there, not talking about putting those specific teams, then yeah, I think we have a real risk at having to pay him a whole lot of money. But if he's talking about going to a winner or talking about going to a big city, obviously that kind of lowers the population of teams that he can kind of, you know, pick from.
So I guess the also, question is, do opera passes count towards a salary cap?
Exactly. The second point is this. You're right. The league as a whole is going to a smaller, more agile players that can shoot, extend the defense, things of that nature. That's not to say that there is no role in the NBA for big men. And if you can kind of just contain Powell, use him like you should be using a kind of a specialty player, then you can get away with playing Pau Gasol, right? DeAndre Jordan, obviously he's not DeAndre Jordan, but he's playing big minutes on the Clippers. You have Bogut playing minutes on the Warriors. You have Duncan and Aldridge playing minutes on these Spurs. They're good teams that still have big guys, right? You just have to be able to, you know, control how you play them, and you can't play them 32 minutes a game. So the Bulls' problem with Powell isn't a contract issue, at least now, and it cannot be a contract issue going forward. It's just using him in the correct way. Now, the response to that is, okay, you know, the Bulls have no control when it comes to Powell. They just, you know, drop their draws every time. And, you know, Powell says he wants to play 34 minutes, and we're like, yes, Powell, you can do whatever you want to. So maybe that's going to happen. I don't know. I hope not, but I'm hoping the Bulls can smarten up when it comes to Powell. We can sign him for a decent contract, and we can move on from there.
You know, if Powell demands $20 million, maybe Kobe Bryant can just cut him a check.
That's true. Here's a key point that we got to think about, you know, countering my argument. If him and Kobe are so close, then maybe Kobe taught Powell the art of armed robbery, right? Because that's what Kobe's doing right now to the Lakers, right? He's stealing money from the Lakers. And I know he's done a ton in the past. He's one of the greatest players of all time. But he's literally getting money for no product. In fact, he's getting money and making things worse, right?
Maybe Powell's like... You just referenced Kobe as one of the greatest players of all time. Before we hit the record button on this episode, you also called him the most overrated player.
He certainly is. I mean, I think people can be both? Yeah, absolutely. Kobe's a great player, right? But I think there are people out there that are like, oh, who's the greatest post player, post Jordan player in the NBA? LeBron or Kobe or Duncan or Garnett? No, Kobe's not in that range. I don't even want to get into this debate because I know Kobe's like Beyonce. That there are people that will show up at my house trying to put the pause on me if I talk about Kobe. So I don't even want to get into it. I don't want the beef. I don't want the drama.
You don't believe in 5 NBA championships, what, second or third all-time scoring? That doesn't interest you?
He's a great player. How many times were he the best player on those teams? I don't know. Two of those championship teams. You know, Powell might have an argument that he was the best player in one of those years. He was so-called the best player. I don't know. Kobe's great.
You don't think he's as great as people know him to be.
I don't understand the awards. I just don't. I don't really.
This farewell tour has been weird. You know, and I gotta give credit to the Kobe stans that have made it out, you know, to all of these away games, because while I consider them strange, they're definitely impressive.
Yeah.
Just because they come out in droves, and I just don't get it. I was listening to a podcast, I think last week, and the whole Kobe fandom is just odd because it's not like he's like super personable.
Yeah, people like the fact that he's a dick, right? It's like people like I can see like, oh man, Kobe punched me in the face when I asked for an autograph. This is Kobe being Kobe, you know. Kobe shot 31, you know, shots and hit 6. That's just Kobe trying to win. Like, I don't understand it. Like, I just don't. I don't get the Kobe thing. And
maybe it's like a social media thing, or maybe I'm just recognizing this more as an adult. But I feel like the Jordan fandom was never at this fever pitch.
But there are people our age that go hard for Kobe too. It's not like limited. In fact, I think it's people our age more. Like, because if you're, you know, going to shell out $600 for tickets, you're probably not 19, right? Maybe you have parents or something like that. But I feel like it's adults. It's a older audience. But I don't even want to get into this, man.
All I know is that Pau Gasol has hugged Kobe Bryant more times in the past 2 weeks than I probably have hugged my own wife.
You would think Kobe's dying. Like, does Kobe have cancer that is not telling us? Like, you know, do only like the Kobe stans and NBA players know that Kobe has cancer, and this is like the last time we're going to get a chance to see him? I just don't understand. I don't understand it. I
remember the Kobe farewell tour was pretty endearing, say, in like November when he first announced the retirement. And I thought, you know, with League Pass, you can catch all the games. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool, you know, kind of cool to see Kobe, you know, try to capture a Kobe moment on the road against Philadelphia.
There are not going to be any Kobe moments because Kobe sucks now. But a Kobe moment right now is a contested fadeaway 19-footer that hopefully hits the rim.
Hey, there was a stretch last night where he was giving Mike Dunleavy the business.
That's because Mike Dunleavy is also stealing for the Chicago Bulls.
Hey, well, bringing it back to Pau and the Bulls, I think we're in agreement that there wasn't really a trade there to be made for him, or really for the Bulls in general. But I think we differ in our mindset of whether we should have blown up the team or stood pat.
And it's going to be tough to blow up this team, right? Because, I mean, Jimmy Butler's really good, right? And Derrick Rose maybe getting good, right? Like, Powell's good. Like, you really have to – are you willing to just say, F it, right? And let's just go back to the 2000s. We're going to trade everybody. And what do you get for the players that you have, right? Who's the guy that the Bulls can trade that they can get a Godfather offer for? That they can get a bunch of first-rounders. There's one dude, right? Mm-hmm. Jimmy Butler. So really, if you want to blow up the team, right, if you want to really start over, you want to hit the reset button, you got to trade Jimmy Butler. That's the only guy that really has much value. And people don't want to do that. So, like, I don't know. Like, what can you really do? Like,
you know, it's interesting because we're basically poking holes, not poking holes, but identifying the pretty obvious flaws with this roster and just how it's pretty weak, you know, from top to bottom. We posted a survey earlier last week of we asked our Twitter followers what you thought the Bulls' biggest issue is, and we broke it down into effort, coaching, talent, or bad luck. Bad luck meaning the injuries. We talked about this a little bit on last week's podcast. And surprisingly, talent actually came in second at 31%, surpassed by effort at 36%. So,
you know what that tells you, right?
What's that?
People on Twitter are stupid.
Hey, I refuse to speak ill towards our followers and listeners.
If you voted for effort, that's not like a guarantee that you're stupid, but that you know, hints at the fact that you're stupid, right? Like, I'm just joking. I'm just joking. I just don't. Again, I'm a weird person. I understand that all the things I say are just kind of just like out there. But like, I feel like all NBA players try. Like, I feel like it's hard to like have 5% body fat, right? Like, I think it's like hard to be like at the point where like, if you're open, like, you always hit the jump shot no matter what. Right. Like, I just don't believe this theory that, like, these like, lazy players that don't care. And, like, I don't know. I just don't.
It is a very strange narrative, right? Like, that these players are just collecting checks. I mean, I could see that in the, what, like, the early to mid-2000s when that very much was the case. Yeah. But now, like, I don't know. Like, these are all guys, like, want to win and play hard. Maybe they don't necessarily do the right thing on the court, but they're definitely trying.
Yeah, like, I know, like, Tony Snell looks sleepy, right? But, like, Like, Tony Snell doesn't fuck with cheeseburgers. Like, he can't.
Hey, hold
like,
on, hold on, hold on. Did you see today that Tony Snell tweeted that he received some sort of, like, gold membership card from Chipotle?
Okay, see, that just fucked me up right there. Although, I feel like Chipotle, relatively healthy, but I'm also fat, so I don't know.
Hey, man, Chipotle's had a rough stretch here. They're giving out membership cards to Tony Snell. First it was E. coli, now it's this. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Chipotle. You gotta get your shit together.
Yeah, I don't think it's effort. I think it's a combination of roster.
Yeah. Well,
we talked about this before. I mean, I was talking about. Everybody knows I'm the captain of the Tibbs fan club. I feel like this roster has had problems since like 2011, and Tibbs was just covering it up, right? You know, yeah, right. Tibbs was basically Theraflu, and we just like came off the Theraflu, and now we're sick again, right? I kind of feel like that's what the issue is, you know. But
can we talk a minute about how dirty the Bulls did Bulls legend Kirk Heinrich?
You know, I'm not going to say that yet because I kind of feel like the Bulls are going to fire Gar Foreman and Kirk's going to be our next GM.
Wow.
So,
Do you think there was an under-the-table deal?
Yeah, like I feel like Kirk, like we're going to trade you, but you got 5% of the team. So, so that first minute, right? You know, like the Bulls saved the luxury tax, but eventually Kirk, that was just like giving Kirk Heinrich money because he's like a shareholder. So, you know, I don't know.
God, to trade – here's what bothered me. You know, not only are you trading the dude twice, and this guy has played through injuries and has been nothing but loyal, especially, you know, under the heavy criticism of Bulls fans, yet he's you know, what, among the record holders for, like, most 3 points made, most minutes played in franchise history. But I think what really got to me was the fact that, one, I think he was blindsided by it, at least some of the reports that I read. No, and two, like, this dude has 4 kids and a house in the area. Like, that's gonna suck to, like, have to move, you know, halfway across the country and not be with your kids. And maybe I'm just, you know, speaking from a new dad perspective, but, man, that would be shitty to go through.
Yeah, I guess those millions of dollars kind of make things okay. like the fact that it's like kids will never want for money probably is like
there is a distinct difference between me and Kirk Heinrich where, yeah, like, one, he plays defense, and two, I don't make millions of dollars.
Yeah, like Kirk Heinrich kids are good, right? They're like they'll never drive like a Honda CRV, right? So I'm just salty to the fact that the Bulls got like the third best holiday, right? So you got like Drew Holiday.
There's more than two.
Well, there's four actually, right? But so he might get the third. So there's the youngest brother that plays for UCLA. I don't follow college basketball that much. I saw him playing, but so I don't even know if he's better than him, right? But there's certainly Drew Holiday, right? Mm-hmm. Worse than Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday married Lauren Holiday, who's on the United States soccer team. She's actually really good, right? So she's better, right? So Justin Holiday, at best, third best Holiday. That troubles me.
The front office has a history of picking the worst brother.
They do.
Let me you of Marcus and Jeff Teague.
Jeff Teague, yeah.
So that doesn't surprise me. But you know what?
Wait, what other brothers do we have? Didn't we have Boozer's brother on our summer team for a long time?
Yeah, he was on the summer league team for a quick minute. I feel like there was another brother pairing that
would Pow?
Pow. We did have Tony Allen's brother on our summer league team too.
Okay. Yeah.
So for whatever reason we like getting the worst.
I feel like there's a big brother we're missing. Maybe. I don't know. We'll think about it. All right.
What I was gonna say was Justin Holiday is gonna be key when we make our miraculous run to the finals in scouting out his former team, the Golden State Warriors. He probably knows their playbook inside out. Yeah. He's going to totally provide intel that's going to carry us championship.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely going to happen.
While we're on the topic of front office failures, I think this is a good segue into your boy, Dougie McBuckets. And the reason why this bridges
my boy
conversation is because you know, the front office came under a lot of fire in the past few months.
You mean like my mentions? On fire.
I think there was definitely a population out there that weren't happy, especially after, you know, Doug's rookie season and the first few months of this season, where, okay, the Bulls gave up essentially 2 first-round draft picks and 3 second-round picks for Doug McDermott, so a total of 5 picks in total, and just don't see him being worth it. Now, after all of that, we've seen a week where Doug has gone 1-for-6 from the field in a loss to the Cavs, only scoring 3 points, and then becoming the second coming of Larry Bird against the Raptors, going 13-for-17, 30 points in a career high, and also followed it up with a pretty nice performance against the Lakers. Again, you kind of have to caveat all these Lakers performances, or at least put an asterisk by them, because
absolutely,
you know, the Lakers are trash, and it's just really hard to realistically evaluate a team or players when they do well against the Lakers. But that being said, what's Doug closer to, the 1-for-6 against the Cavs or the 13-for-17 against the Raptors?
We don't know, and I think that's my whole point with Doug McDermott. You know, Doug McDermott played, I mean, let's look at this a minute. Doug McDermott has played 300 minutes last year, right? And he's gotten a lot more minutes this year. But he essentially had a red shirt season last year, right? So this season, he's getting used to the athleticism of the NBA. He basically is going from playing power forward to shooting guard. There's a lot. He's kind of in this dog shit offense with all these ball stoppers. Remember, he was playing a lot better with somebody passing with him and Joakim Noah. I just am not ready to give up on Doug McDermott. And although it sounds kind of crazy that we gave 5 picks for them, like 3 of those picks were second rounders. There was a question about whether we could sign 2 first round picks. They were the 18th and 22nd or 18th and 21st. Like, it wasn't like these were lottery picks. I just, you know, the trade has not worked out right now, but I don't think it's really that bad. So with that said, let me answer your question. I don't know. But he's got an NBA skill. He's got like a legit NBA skill, right? Like Doug McDermott can shoot the ball. Doug McDermott can be a very effective offensive player in the NBA. So I understand the lure of Doug McDermott. I understand why the Bulls did it. And I'm not ready to give up. I think he can be an effective player. I think, I don't think he's a 25-point game scorer, but I think he can be a very effective 6th or 7th man.
Doug is such the personification of Hoiball, right? Like, basically pace and space, super offense when he plays to his potential, but just terrible defense.
And the weird thing about Doug McDermott is, like, I don't think that Doug McDermott is really – it's not athleticism that really is ailing Doug McDermott. It's like awareness. And right. I kind of feel like it has a lot to do with the fact that he played power forward in the NBA, in the college, that he tends to sag a lot. He seems to hang around the basket a lot. Like, he gets lost. He's not very good, like, guarding the perimeter or guarding pick and rolls, for that matter. I wonder if, like, if he's not a dumb dude, like, you can kind of coach that out of him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm excited about Doug. I don't know what's gotten into him. I know that he had a talk with Hoiberg apparently before the Raptors game, but it looks like, based on the last 2 games that he's played and played very well in, that maybe he's taking Xanax before the games and just calming down and doesn't look like a hot mess out there, just frantic. I mean, the dude has to lead the league in giving up and ones.
Yeah,
like, it seems like every game the other team gets an and one off of Doug McDermott foul, but. You know, he's trending upwards, so we hopefully can see him continue to do that.
Like, Doug McDermott's shooting 44% from the 3-point line. Like, it wasn't just the last 2 games. Like, Doug McDermott can shoot the ball. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. I like Doug McDermott. I think he's fine.
So we're getting excited about Doug McDermott. How excited should we be about Derrick Rose? The guy's posting the best numbers of the season, has been trending upward really since Christmas. I saw a stat where he scored over 20 points a game for the first time in 3 straight games since 2012. So it's basically been 4 years. Is Derrick Rose back?
I'm not going to say that, but I mean, I want to say that.
It's a trap.
Yeah, right? It's like, I'm trying to think back of all the times that, like, how many podcasts do you think we started off with, like, is Derrick Rose back? Yeah. You know, it has to be like 7, right? Between
the life of this podcast has paralleled the Derrick Rose injury history.
Yeah, demise, right?
Right. Right, and I don't know. I don't want to jinx it, but I will say that it is nice to watch him relentlessly attack the basket. You know, in yesterday's Lakers game, he was just getting to the, again, it's against the Lakers, got to add that disclaimer. But it was nice to watch him attack the basket at full speed and not have to hold my breath that he was going to injure himself.
Yeah, here are the three things that you got to worry about with Derrick Rose, I think. First, athleticism, right? Does he look like he's athletic enough to be a contributor, right? I think that check mark, that box is checked, right? The second is shot selection, right? How is Derrick doing in terms of picking his shots? Is he taking a lot of outside shots? Is he attacking the basket? That box is checked as well. Now, the third thing is kind of questionable. For me, I like to think about like Derrick's court vision. And I think Derrick is actually passing the ball pretty well. So that box is checked. So I kind of feel like you should feel good about Derrick Rose, but I'm just not going to say it. Just not going to do it. Just like I don't want to really go hard on Kobe. I don't want to go hard on Beyonce. Like, if you walk around and say Beyonce's overrated, like, people might jump out the woodwork and, like, shoot you.
What?
Exactly. I was joking. I'm not going to say Derrick is back because I should say Derrick Brack and I should knock on wood. I don't know. It's tough.
It does feel like, and maybe this is just an easy way to think about things on the surface, but it does feel like his recent uptick in production is tied to the fact that Jimmy Butler's out with his knee injury. How concerned are you about them meshing together once Jimmy does return? Because, you know, the big negative on Jimmy with his rise to being the Bulls' best player is that he does have a tendency to stop the ball. He does have a tendency to go at it in isolation more than
negative. He has negative court vision.
Exactly. But, you know, the strange thing about that is he has posted a couple games with double-digit assists.
Because he's good at, like, it's weird. Like, I feel like he's good at saying, like, I'm going to pass the ball today. Or he can post up big assist game numbers. But I feel like assists are kind of a shitty way of determining whether somebody's a good passer or not, which is kind of weird. I don't know. Just because it's so determined on what the other person does. Right. Like, didn't we have a game a couple games ago where Derrick was like the Bulls were like 2 for 12 on potential.
Yeah, there were 14 potential assists that Derrick could have had, and the Bulls were 2 for 14.
Yeah, so I think assists are kind of a funky number to kind of determine like how well you're passing. But I don't know.
So all that being said, though, what are your thoughts on the Rose and Butler dynamic when Jimmy gets healthy? I mean, can we still expect Rose to be as good as he's been with Butler in the lineup?
There's really nothing about their games that really conflict, but there's nothing about their games that really mesh.
I feel like this is how you address that issue. If I'm Hoiberg, I have those guys start, obviously, when they're both healthy. But from then on, you know, so that we don't have this dueling banjo, you know, scenario on offense, or we don't have a situation where just one of the guys is floating in the corner, really being ineffective on offense. For the rest of the game, just have them have just one of them on the floor at a time and have that person, whoever's on the floor, whether it be Jimmy or Derrick, dictate the offense. And depending on how that game goes, let them take you home if it is a claim at the end to run that 1-4, not that 1-4, that 1-5 high pick and roll with Powell based on who's having a better game. I mean, maybe that's too simple of a game plan, but that's how I would try to balance their strengths.
So you put it more on coaching as opposed to, like, their inability to kind of get things together.
A little bit. I mean, look, there have been far too many times where Jimmy has the ball and Derek's just in the corner essentially being ineffective. I think Hoiberg needs to figure out a better way to use the talent on the roster, and whether that's, you know, mixing and matching, using different lineups, keeping one of them in there while the other is on the bench, so be it. I think that's the way to go, because, like you said, it's weird. They're not fits for each other, but they're not direct clashes. What I guess what I would like to see more than anything is Derek still running the point and having a slashing Jimmy rather than a Jimmy running any isolation or pick and roll. Remember how Jimmy used to be
Corey Brewer?
A younger version of Corey Brewer.
Yeah.
Just running that baseline.
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't he be that type of player but on steroids?
Man, because Corey longer. Brewer ain't getting paid $94 million a year. That's why.
I just love
Corey Brewer ain't got a fish tank the size of Antarctica in his house. Dewey now.
That's fair. Corey Brewer doesn't have his own player exclusive shoe with Jordan Brand.
Yeah, exactly. That's why. That's why he's not cutting that baseline. Cut that baseline wouldn't get these checks cashed.
I very much enjoy slashing Jimmy Butler than isolation Jimmy Butler, and I think the Bulls go a lot farther if he gets regulated to that role. If Derrick Rose is in the game, does that make sense? Because I don't know.
Yeah. So I mean, it's funny how we've like three Derrick Rose games, and we're like, all right, time to get the game back to Derek. You know,
one of those games against the Lakers, another one where Doug had an out of body experience.
Yeah, like we're like, all right, this whole year has been cool, but the king is back.
Hey, speaking of Doug's out of body experience, it seems like we just own the Raptors every single game, and not just this year. You know, you go back to the last several years, I think the Bulls have won like 8 or 9 straight against the Raptors.
We're not fearful.
I mean, just like their ambassador, Drake, I feel like they're fraudulent.
See, that is the real problem right there. Man. Skip Beyonce or Kobe, man. Drake slander will not be tolerated on the Bulls show.
Look, I'm not going to get into it. But that being said, let's say that the Bulls do position themselves as the 7th seed and the Raptors stay where they're at the 2 seed. You know, come late April, Bulls-Raptors, first-round matchup. Would the Bulls be the favorites in that series?
Nah, they wouldn't be the favorites.
Really? Despite all that we've seen with the Bulls consistently, or I should say constantly, owning them in the last, you know, 2-3 years.
I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that have happened in the past, but you know, kind of now is now, and this team is a lot better. This Raptors team is obviously a lot better than any other Raptor team in the past, and this Bulls team with change at the coaching position is a lot worse than any Bulls team has been out there. So the Bulls have had some success. I wouldn't take past performances. I don't think that Vegas will take those past performances such to heart.
I do feel like, though, we match up pretty well against
the Warriors. Yeah, we do.
Considering they don't have, like, a big shot blocker, so Rose can get into the lane pretty easily. As long as Jimmy's healthy, he'll be able to contain DeMar. And I don't know, Kyle Lowry and Derrick Rose at this point should be a wash. And then you just have to look at the supporting cast. I mean, is there anyone outside of Lowry and DeRozan that would scare you?
No. I mean, yeah. With all that said before, I still think the Bulls have a pretty good chance. Kind of. I'd certainly rather see them than the Cavs, who just
right.
You know, pulled the pants down of Oklahoma City yesterday. That was pretty special. So yeah, certainly.
We'll wrap things up with this. I just pulled up the standings right now, and the Bulls do sit at 8th at 29-26.
By the way, can I that's crazy. The Bulls, like we got past this. I feel like in 2011, like we're back here, like yeah. we're back fighting for a first round spot.
Life is at you fast.
Sorry, not first round spot. We're battling for a playoff spot. Like, man, that sucks. That really does. I'm not ready. I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready, like, this year to be back at the AFC. Like, I know people were expecting it, but I wasn't ready.
Well, I got two questions related to this playoff positioning. One, with us being 8th, we're actually only a half game behind the 5th seed. So that just goes to show how cluttered it is in the bottom half of the East bracket. What is, and we may have touched on this last week, but what is our most favorable playoff matchup right now? Who would you like to see in the first round?
I mean, I don't know, the worst team. like as opposed to like, give me.
I guess the contenders at this point would be the Raptors, Heat, Celtics, and Pacers. And I only put the Pacers up there because I guess there's an outside chance that we would get either the fourth or fifth seed, and they move up to the fourth and fifth seed. I feel like none of those teams, other than maybe the Raptors, I would be confident against.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'd be I'm sorry. I'm putting a lot of thought into this, man. I've put a lot of thought. I think that we would lose to the Celtics. Obviously, I think we'd lose to the Cavs. I think we would have a very close series with the Raptors.
Yeah.
I think that did we talk about the Hawks? Did you mention the Hawks?
Yeah, we're a half game behind them. The Hawks, I guess. I mean, really, any of these teams could be.
Yeah. The Hawks would like sweep us like four straight. Yeah. It's just like an embarrassing series. Talk about a team that has our number.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at all these teams, and I know that you just went on an explanation of why past performance really doesn't matter. But you know, we're what 0-1-3 against the Hornets this year. We're 0-2 against the Hawks. I think the Pacers were even, but the games that we've won have been down to the wire. The Celtics were 1-2 against the Heat. Were 0-1. I think we only have a winning record against the Cavs and Raptors when I look at this East playoff picture.
The Bulls only beat good teams. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, my last question is, knowing what we know about these Bulls, knowing what we have just discussed for the last 40 minutes about this roster being trash and not really being able to do much with it, and really the future looking a bit bleak unless, something miraculous happens, I just got my playoff ticket invoice and season ticket renewal in the mail. And there are some deliberations to be had between my wife and I on whether we renew. What's your advice on whether I should still continue to be a season ticket holder for the Bulls going into next season?
I was talking to my buddy. I got a buddy, Chris, who's a season ticket holder. And I was talking to him about how it kind of has to be hard to be a Bulls season ticket holder, right? Because you're not 100% sure if this team is really ready to go for it. And if you're paying like thousands of dollars to be a Bulls season ticket holder, I think that it would be nice if you like had the feeling like this team would like do anything to be a champion. And I'm not sure that this team is. I'm not sure that they, maybe it's just conservative. Maybe it's a conservative team and, maybe they clearly want to win, but like, is this team really to roll the dice? Is it championship or bust for this team? I don't particularly know. And when they constantly try to get under the luxury tax, which makes sense from a business perspective, but from a basketball perspective, sometimes kind of runs havoc on that goal. I don't know, man. I don't know. I've been given a lot of I don't knows. I'm sorry. I feel like I've not been a very good podcast host today.
Yes, you haven't helped me at all. Yeah. Dilemma. Yeah, it's tough, man. Especially this year where I've had to where my profit margin hasn't been as high as previous seasons, and I've usually haven't had to I haven't had much difficulty in selling tickets in past seasons. This is my sixth year being a season ticket holder, and man, it's so hard to sell these games this year. I've resorted to for those who follow us on Twitter, you probably see that I'm usually posting tickets for sale through our Bull Show account.
Which I'm not sure if this podcast might just be a front for you to sell your tickets.
It could be. But with how shitty the team's been.
It's a shitty front.
It's a shitty front. And it's funny because I almost feel like I'm like scamming people. Like, buy my Bulls tickets, even though if you look at my last 7-8 tweets, I'm shitting on the team.
You have gotten like darker when it comes to the Bulls.
Like
your Twitter usually, it started as a very positive books on jokes. And I feel like it's gotten darker over the last like 3 months.
Snarkier.
Yeah.
Like hating life. And I don't know. Yeah. It's like I've now transitioned being a new parent into like that get off my lawn type of stage in my life.
You basically become E.
It's disappointing. I've noticed that too, and it's like I used to get so much enjoyment watching the Bulls and just seeing them really overachieve the last several years, especially when, you know, even when Derek went down with injuries, you know, I wasn't expecting much, and just brought so much happiness to see them play well with this ragtag team, whether it was Nate Robinson or, you know, a young upstart, late round draft pick, Jimmy Butler, carrying the team to victory, Joakim Noah, the try-hard Bulls. And now, you know, this has just been, as we talked about last week, just the most underwhelming and miserable season in quite some time. And it's definitely reflective in my Twitter account. And I want to turn the page, but man, the Bulls got to give me something to work with here.
Yeah, hopefully somebody comes saves us and makes us, like, makes the Bulls great again. But
wait, was that a low-key Donald Trump reference?
Yeah. Shout out to Donald Trump. You know I'm voting for.
Oh, God. My wife and I were talking about how we legitimately might leave the country if he gets elected president.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, like, I don't, you know, whatever your politics. It's like, if you, like, told somebody, like, a year ago that, like, wasn't super deep into politics, like, yo, Donald Trump is, like, the front runner for the GOP, like, you wouldn't get committed. But certainly the person that you were talking to would be like, I think she's not crazy, right? and now, like, that's legitimately going to happen. Like, this is not a politics show. I'm right. Big into politics, but, like, that's real. Like, it's not giggles anymore. Like, that could happen. And I hope y'all are ready, okay? I'm ready for Hillary versus Trump.
I have no idea how this conversation devolved into Donald Trump's candidacy for presidency.
I just wanted to make the Bulls better again, and you went all political on me, man.
But I think that is a sign that we need to wrap this up. Make sure you check us out also on our affiliate sites, bloggable.com and goerhiphop.com. You can also catch a show on thebullshow.com. You can't find the show on Tidal, right? Like, there's no Tidal membership required to listen to
this. I listen to this podcast called The Slate Political Gabfest. And they have, like, every episode, they have, like, a secret subscribers-only part of the podcast. I'd really like to have, like, a secret subscribers-only podcast from Kanye. Because this is also crazy.
If we could get Kanye on the show, if we could get any Bulls play on the show, we probably should charge for that episode.
Yeah. Like, if we get Pippen on the show again, like...
Oh, man, what a capitalism failure on our part.
I mean, you're the finance guy. I mean, really, yeah, we fucked up, man.
Well, for now, no title to subscription needed to listen to our show. So make sure you subscribe on iTunes. Check us out on our affiliate sites. Give us a follow on Twitter at The Bull Show and at Mitch Don't Lie. And I guess with that, we'll catch you guys next week.
Peace.